Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply. Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert-guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Hello everyone, welcome to Talking in the Rain. My name is Saira Unju, I am your host, and today I have with me folk singer, shantyman, overall musician, Sean Dagger. Sean is based in Montreal, but he is in Vancouver for a show with Corleone. He is leading both La Nef from Montreal and Vancouver's Corleone for their sea shanty show, The Return Voyage. You can catch them at the St. Andrew Wesley's United Church on February 16th and 17th and go on this 75-minute musical journey with heartfelt sea songs and shanties about adventure, longing, and life on the high seas. And keep listening to find out about this show and Sean. Enjoy.
Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for joining me. I would like to get started with a little introduction. So tell me about yourself, how you kind of started in being a shantyman and how it's going now.
Okay, well, hi, my name is Sean Dagger and I do lots of different things, including sing sea shanties. I've been a folk musician and folk singer for the last 30 years. That's been my main job. And I perform in different venues, and including pubs, but, you know, concerts and all different kinds of halls. And I always noticed that any song that had a part for the audience to respond with was always a big hit. People always enjoyed those. And then sea shanties are, of course, a genre of music where the whole point is that everyone has to respond, you know, throughout the whole song. So I thought, oh, well, here's a collection of 400 songs or so that are all guaranteed to be hits. So I started doing more and more of them. And then I, you know, alongside all the other things I was doing as well. And then eventually I got hired by Ubisoft to sing on the Assassin's Creed soundtrack. AC3 was the first game I did. And a few guys and myself, my colleague Dave Gossage hired us. I play with him a bit in the different configurations, and he hired us to come sing the songs. We were in AC3. We were it's the one that takes place in the American Revolution. So we were American soldiers. We were British soldiers. We were tavern musicians. You know, we were playing as well in the tavern scenes, And we were sailors for a sort of a little sidebar of the game where they went off to sea for. I never played the game, so I don't actually know what I'm talking about. And interestingly, my wife also, who's a classical Baroque cellist, she got hired for that as well to do the opening scene, which takes place in a theater, and there's an orchestra playing. So that was my wife and all her colleagues. Anyway, so it was we were all involved in that, and then the shanty part of the game got really popular. So Ubisoft decided to make the next game, Black Flag, based entirely around the sea shanties, and then Rogue is another spin-off of that. So I ended up, you know, becoming familiar with I guess about 100 songs that that we included in the game. I don't know the exact number, 85 or somewhere around there. So that's how I really got deep into shanties. And then when I saw how popular they were, I started doing them on my own, including, you know, I did a program with La Nef, that's the group we're coming to Vancouver with. We did a program of shanties and recorded the album, and we've been touring it as much as possible ever since.
That's amazing. So you can technically say that you've inspired a game.
Well, the songs that we did inspired the game, and the way we sang them seemed to work. And we were guided in the way we sang them by Dave Gossage and Benedict Ouimet, who were sort of the producers on the site, telling us, you know, saying, "No, sing it worse," and "No, sing it drunker." And you know, it was really their idea of how they wanted us to perform the songs that made them so successful. I mean, yeah, we had to do it, but they, you know, it was a collaborative thing.
That's so fun. Before we started recording, we kind of talked about how you're traveling now and you'll be traveling a lot until basically mid-year this year.
Yeah.
And that you haven't really done this much traveling before, like a touring. What's that been like for you for the past month? Touring, being away from family?
Yeah, it's well, you know, my kids, like they're older. One of them, the older one, lives in an apartment, so we see her, you know, every once in a while. The younger one, she's in college, living with us. We see her once in a while too. So it hasn't been a big change. And actually, the tour I'm on right now is with a group called Sky Consort and Emma Björling, and my wife Amanda Kiesmet plays cello in that. So I was away for a couple of days. I did a bit of solo tour for a week here in the Northwest Territories, and now Sky Consort and Emma Björling is here, and we're doing another week of touring in the Northwest Territories. So I'm actually here with my wife, which happens a fair amount. So that's great.
Yeah, perks of both being musicians.
Yep, exactly.
It's amazing. Yeah. So, do you want to talk a little bit about Sky Consort? Because you've mentioned Lenef as well, so you perform with, a couple of different groups.
Yeah. So Sky Concert is the first sort of serious project I tried to organize with a few colleagues. We started in 1999, and we recorded an album in 2000, and we did a bunch of touring. Not a lot, but we did around Eastern Canada. And that was great. And we did 3, 4 albums in the first sort of 6, 7 years we were working, and then took a bit of a hiatus, and then we met up with this Swedish singer called Emma Björling, and Alex, the co-founder of Sky Consort, and Amanda and Emma and I were thinking that we would like to do a new project together, and so we decided to resuscitate the Sky Consort moniker, and we put Sky Consort and Emma Björling, which sort of fits. All of the Sky Consort albums we've done have been sort of, or most of them have been, in conjunction with someone else. The first one was Matthew White, countertenor, and Sky Consort, and then we did Michael Slattery, who's an American Irish tenor, and so we all there was a lot of Sky Consort, and so this one was Sky Consort and Emma Björling, and so Emma's a really great Swedish singer and singer of Swedish songs and tunes, and a teacher of Scandinavian folk music, and she, you know, can sing in, well, English and Swedish, but also, you know, Norwegian and Danish, and she can wrap her mouth around French pronunciations too for the song. Sometimes I sing songs that are in French, and so it's great working with Emma. She's a native speaker of Scandinavian folk music, if I can put it that way.
Talk about French. You're based out of Montreal, right?
Yes, English is my first language, but my French is pretty good now, and So I sing a lot of French songs, and one of the places I played for the last 20 years or so was a medieval restaurant called L'Auberge du Dragon Rouge, the Red Dragon Inn. And it was so fun. Just it was we're acoustic and wandering around the tables, a small little place. They'd sort of cram 65 people in there, and everyone would be hollering at the top of their lungs, and you have to get up there and belt out these songs over top of them. And the singing the songs and playing the tunes wasn't even the most important part. The most important part was interacting with the crowd and ho hollering back at people when they hollered at you, and getting people up for their birthdays to do stupid dances, and just making it fun for everybody, mainly by making it fun for yourself. That was, and we used music as part of that, so I learned a whole bunch of old French songs, and same thing with the shanties. We had the sort of the crude version of them that we sang in the tavern, and I also took some of them, or take some of them, to make sort of concert versions that are better for listening to.
Yeah, I can't imagine just the, because Corleone performs in a church, right? Just singing crude chanties in a church. What a combo.
Yeah, it's something else. And well, the first concert I did of shanties with Lanef in 2014, after the games hit, that was the challenge. The challenge was to find some of the nicest melodies, because there were really beautiful songs in those shanties that we sang in the video game, but we weren't allowed to do anything beautiful with them. And every time we sort of put in some nice harmonies or whatever, the producers would say, no, you're pirates, you don't sing harmonies. It's cut, which I don't necessarily think is the case, but I understand what they were going for. So finally we're doing the concert, and I was like, okay, now I can take this beautiful song and make what I think is a beautiful rendition of it. So, but then we also, in that concert, we made sure that to do some of the songs in a crude and raw way, unarranged, just like, this is more like it would likely have sounded. I can't speak for sure about what it would have sounded on a 19th century sailing ship, but I think it would have been more like this raw version. And so when I say crude, I sort of mean like uncooked rather than crude content, although there is crude content as well.
And talking about, performing and arranging harmonies. So The Return Voyage, the show that Corleone's performing with Lanef here in Vancouver, that is a 75-minute show which you arranged. First of all, that sounds insane to me because that is such a long show. Did you arrange it on your own? And if so, what was that process like?
It's a collection of songs that have been arranged over the last 10 years. So it's not 75 minutes of new music for this show. So we performed with Corleone in 2020. We did, I don't know how many songs with them. Maybe there are 10 or 12 songs that we did with the choir. And so I did the choral arrangements for that. But a lot of that was in 2020. A lot of that was based on the arrangements I had done for the concert in 2014, and which then got updated for the recording in 2016. So, it was over the course of a few years that I got them up to that place where they were ready in 2020 for that concert. And now we've done another album. We just finished another album with Lanef of sea shanties. It's called Red Sky at Night, and actually it's coming out just now in time for this concert with Corleone. So there were another batch of, I don't know, 14 songs, some of which I then reimagined for or expanded to be with the choir. So that again was work I did last year, which I had to sort of tweak and expand on to be ready for the choir. So it all sort of came together like that. And even the Red Sky at Night album was based largely on songs that I had done in my video series that I did during the pandemic called The Shanty of the Week. So I did 65 weeks of doing a shanty every week, where I would do this vocal arrangement and introduce a song and perform it. So that is what made the doing the work for Red Sky at Night sort of was almost all done. So yes, I've put together 75 minutes of music, but it's happened in bits and pieces over the last decade.
Good to know. Okay. A perfect segue into your YouTube series, Shanty of the Week, that ended in October 2021. You mentioned that you started in the pandemic. Did this surge in popularity of shanties over TikTok made you want to start these series, or had you already started them? What was the timeline like for you?
Yeah, I had started already. I started in September 2020, just in time for Talk Like a Pirate Day, obviously. And because things shut down in March 2020, and then they were sort of opening up over the summer. And it's when they shut down again in September that I said, okay, I have to do something, and as I'm going to have time to do something. So I started in September 2020. And I was on sort of week I don't know 19 or 20 when the Wellerman became huge on TikTok. So I benefited from that. I got a huge surge in viewers and subscribers. And but I didn't start because of the wave, and I didn't cause the wave. It was just sort of incidental. And then and then a few weeks later, I did a collaboration with the Longest Johns. We sang a song together, and so when they put that out, I got another huge surge of things because their online presence is amazing, something to behold. So that was the timeline of that. And then I kept it going till October, because by then things were starting to open up again for real, October 2021. So just over a year. And I had to decide, am I gonna stay in my basement recording songs for the internet, or am I gonna go out and be a performer again? Because I didn't have the time to do both. So I decided to go out and be a performer again.
Honestly, I mean, just from seeing all the comments on your last episode, it seemed like everyone, it was kind of like a bittersweet goodbye. Everyone was really happy you did the series, but also sad to see you go. But I mean, I feel like the opportunity to see it, you perform live is also really exciting. So I guess it's like a win-lose.
Yeah, I was so.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10/1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Moved, the whole time I did the Shanty of the Week by the comments that people gave me on the videos. It was overwhelmingly positive, which isn't always the case on YouTube videos. And people were just writing in heartfelt things like, oh, these shanties coming out on Tuesday morning really is what makes me be able to get through my week. Or, that's an extreme comment, but I got that from people, or people saying they really look forward to it, or people saying that they actually were singing along, which was the point of it. I wanted people to sing along. People telling me that they were doing that is what made me keep doing it. And I was moved by people's response to it, or at least what they were claiming was their response to it.
Yeah. And talking about reaching out to people, I also saw that you posted your artist Spotify Wrapped on Instagram, and you had like what 20, not 22.8 million listeners, which is wild. Does it, do you ever just think about how many people that is?
Yeah, I know. I mean, most of the, like, probably 90% of the stuff that people listen to that has my name on it is stuff on Assassin's Creed, because they, Ubisoft put all those songs out on Spotify. So I understand that it's because of that. But I still, yes, I am struck by the fact that, oh, a lot of people are listening to it. There are a lot of pretty famous people out there that have long-standing careers that have about the same number of views, and it's impressive. I'm impressed that that many people listen to it. It's not something that I expect. I'm a folk singer. I do like this niche thing. I've always tried to have a career, but I wasn't trying to have a mainstream career, or tr trying to I was never trying to reach the masses,
Yeah, I mean, honestly, everyone has their own niche and everyone has what they like. And I mean, even with like sea shanties that really rose to popularity during lockdown, I've known people who like were hardcore shanty listeners before then, and their Spotify Wrapped was just different shanty artists. And Yeah, you really find your own people through music.
I was impressed. Well, the first time that I was impressed is like, when Assassin's Creed and especially Black Flag came out, that people who, weren't folk music fans, people who were, I guess, coming from the video game world, were enjoying this music, which we were doing in a pretty unpopular kind of way. We were just sort of doing it bare bones with voices. We weren't tarting it up at all. And people came to that, and people that I didn't expect to enjoy it did. And I was surprised, So then in 2021, when it came around again and people started freaking out about shandies, I wasn't surprised. I was like, yeah, this happens. People are moved by this stuff.
Yeah. And what drew you to shanties?
It was the connection with the audience. When we're playing a song and people get to participate in the song by hollering, that's always been the best part of any performance for me. And even from when I was first starting, I was saying to my band that I was with at the time, I was like, guys, imagine we could sing this song. It was South Australia I was talking about. I was like, imagine we could sing this song and the audience would sing the responses and we wouldn't have to, right? They would just be like, we could let the audience sing it. And they're like, they didn't quite understand. I probably didn't express it. And it's not even a big thing to express, but that was in 1995 or something. And I was first performing and I was like, I want to do a thing where the audience is part of the show, an important part of the show. And so that's what I'm doing now. And I'm really happy I get to do that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And with Corleone's show, are there going to be any parts where you encourage the audience to participate as well?
Well, first of all of it. I'm gonna, I don't imagine people will sing all the way through, but there are a couple songs that we've really designated to be the songs, for singing with the audience, and where I'm gonna take a moment to actually teach them the crew responses so that they can really be up to speed on it. So yeah, we designed the program. Eric Light, the director of Corleone, really asked for that in the program, and so there's gonna be at least one moment where we teach them, and I'm gonna look through the repertoire too and see if I can find another one where it's worth taking a moment to teach them the audience the responses and inviting them to sing with us. I mean, I imagine if they're coming to the show, partly they want to sing along, but partly they want to hear the choir sing, not their noisy neighbors. So we've got to balance that a little bit.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the Corleone show. Lanef has performed with Corleone before. It was right before lockdown, if I'm not mistaken. So how did the second collaboration come about? Has this been in the works for a while? And what are you most excited about when it comes to this performance?
Yeah, the last concert was right before lockdown, and like two weeks or something before the lockdown. And so Corleone started putting their concerts online, as events in the following season. So this was one of the shows they had put online. And then we worked on it more because we'd recorded it and we'd filmed it. And then we made it into a live album. So we've basically been working with them steadily for the last, oh, it's 4 years now. So we've been basically working with them that whole time. And then we've been out west once. I guess we went out west in 2022. Lanef did to play with the Victoria Symphony. And we were trying to make it work to go to stop in Vancouver and do something with Corleone then. And it didn't work out. So now it's finally worked out for this season, the 23-24 season. So it was, just a desire on everyone's part to do that again. And for us, what doing that again means is, singing with 60 guys, backing us up and giving it their all and really allowing us to sort of melt into their sound a little bit. And it's not an experience that I will get to do often in my life, So I'm really looking forward to being back with him. And Eric Light, the director, is he's such a dynamic guy. He's a great musician, a great singer, and a great director. And to see the way those guys follow him is really, really remarkable. The way we were placed on stage, Eric was in the middle, and I was sort of on his right, if you look from the audience. And our bass player, Bill Gossage, was on his left. And the three of us we're sort of in a line, even though Eric was facing backwards. And we were kind of like a rhythm section together. Eric was in between me. I was playing bouzouki and the bass. So that's the crux of the rhythm in this music. And he was being with us in directing the choir, and the choir follows him like to the nanosecond. It's incredible the way they communicate with each other. So that, you know, the bass player and I, Bill Gossage, we still talk about that, how cool that was to be in that clump with him, you know, and the three of us together, and we were sort of driving our forces and he's driving his forces, you know. So it was great. So I hope that it's something like that again. You know, I don't know what the stage layout's going to be, but I hope that it's like that. Yeah. And even in this is an aside, but we went out to a pub after the show, the whole band and a good number of the choir, I don't know how many of them. And they started singing goofy songs in the pub, and which was hilarious. It was fun. But eventually, of course, Eric, you know, stands up on a, well, I say stands up on a chair. He wasn't really, but in this story, he stands up on a chair, you know, and he starts conducting, and the whole pub is filled with choir people. And from every corner, you know, everyone's sort of looking around posts and other people trying to get a glimpse of Eric, because they just have to sing with him. They can't sing any other way. It was remarkable. And it was a really fun experience.
I love that so much. I am going to stick around after the show and see which pub you're going into. That sounds like a great and a very unique experience. I love that so much.
It was. Yeah. Also, I mean, we were the audience, us Lenef people, we were the audience for that, right? There was nobody else in the bar, but, and we had a great time.
Yeah. Sounds like conducting is like second nature to Eric at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a lot about his career path. You'd have to talk to him about that. But he's great. He did one of the arrangements for one of the songs on the first show. Because he has experience with men's choir that I didn't have. You know, so I was sending them all the arrangements, and he was saying, "Oh yes, I like this one. Oh yes, I like this one. Okay, this is good." And then I sent him this one. He said, "You know what, my guys," because I had basically just given his saying, "Here, the choir can do what my guys are doing already." You know. So he looked at it and he said, "Well, they could." He said, "But that's not going to be what's most efficient, or most effective. What's going to be most effective is if I write this other thing, and my guys will do this, while your guys do that." And I said, "Yeah, of course, go ahead, you know." And it was beautiful. It was really beautiful. In fact, one of my singers came up to me afterward and said, "Sean, what you did for that song that's the most beautiful arrangement I've ever heard you do." And I said, "Well, I didn't do it. Eric did. And maybe that's why."
Oh, my God.
So anyway, no, I really, I'm looking forward to working with Eric again.
Nice. Yeah, it should be exciting. I mean, I'll be honest, anyone I talk to who perform in collaboration with Corleone, they always seem to have a really good experience. So I'm sure this one, again, for you will be good as well.
Exactly.
Also, like, sea shanties, they're so fun. And yeah, you captured their like spirit so well when you were talking about them. I just like the fact that you are performing sea shanties, just you have an advantage in the fun department.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and it's, I choose music like that. I choose music that's easy for people to like, you know, all the time. And people say, "Oh, it's not fair with your music that, you know, it's easy for you to get to audiences." I'm like, "Yeah, well, that's why I chose it, you know." But I understand there are other things that need to be brought to audiences other than what's easy for them. Well, that's not my job. My job is this.
Your job is to have fun.
Yeah.
I love that. And so talk about performing with, you know, like a 60-man choir, and you mentioned Lenef, Sky Consort, and you also perform yourself as well without a group. First of all, do you have a preference? And secondly, what are like some major differences you see in performing alone versus with other people?
So I don't have a preference. I'm glad that I do all of those different things, you know, and I also still play in Irish pubs two nights a week when I'm at home. And I'm really glad that I do all. I wouldn't want to do any one of those things full time. You know, I think that's what makes me enjoy each one, is that I can say, "Oh, well, what's best about this is whatever, and what's best about that is that." And, you know, yes, there are, I don't want to say drawbacks, but, you know, things that aren't the advantage of doing one or the other. But you don't have to worry about that, because the next day you're going to be doing something different. And so you can just focus on what's good about what you're doing that day. That's one thing that makes me really love, you know, all the aspects of my job. Because I also do, you know, arranging and and composing and recording for other projects too. And there again, that's something else, and each thing has its own advantages. In terms of specifically performing alone or with different ensembles, it's extremely different. When you're the nuts and bolts of performing, when you're with a bigger ensemble, you generally have to, you know, set it up beforehand. Okay, this is what it's going to be like. We're going to play this note, then that note, and nothing can be left to chance, because you can't have 70 people improvising together, you know. So, I mean, there are ways you could organize that, but generally there has to be lots of planning. And then playing with a much smaller ensemble, like in the, you know, the pub where I play with the same bass player I was talking about, Bill Gossage, and his brother Dave Gossage, who originally hired us for Assassin's Creed, who's in this Lenef project as well. Well, the three of us can sort of take things in any direction without too much bother, you know. That's pretty freeing, but yet I'm still supported by these two monster musicians, and or them by me, depending on who's taking the lead at any given moment, you know. So that's a pretty good compromise of like freedom to do what you want, but, you know, still being a bunch of you together. And then playing solo is the other extreme. You can really do whatever you want, and I do. You know, I decide in the middle of a song that, oh, this verse I should just do it a cappella. I shouldn't play my instrument in this verse, because I need to establish a different kind of energy here. And so it's just the arrangement sort of evolves as the song progresses, you know. And it's like I feel like I've heard my voice a lot for the last, you know, minute. Maybe I'll just take an instrumental break here and play. So you can just do what feels right in the moment. So that's the music part. And then in terms of connection with the audience, solo gigs, and I've done a bunch of solo gigs over the years, a lot. And I feel a much stronger connection with the audience when I'm not looking sideways to colleagues on stage. You know, I love communing with my colleagues when I'm playing with any, and that's important. But, you know, when you do that, you leave out the audience a little bit of your communication. When I'm playing solo, I'm only looking at the audience. I'm looking for people in the audience that are with me. And you get back more from the audience when you are open with them like that. You know, me playing solo is much less impressive than any sort of ensemble. But yet people are just as connected to what's going on the stage. And so I really have always liked that aspect of playing solo. And then specifically when I'm doing shanty solo, getting the audience to sing with you is magic. When you're alone on stage, and it could fall flat, you know, you could get up there and say like, okay, everybody, let's sing a song. And everyone goes, and that can happen every single song, right? You know, and it has happened to me, right? So I'm like, oh, they're not. So then what do you do? You keep going. Sometimes I stop the song and like say, what's wrong with you people? Didn't I teach you the song? Like, smarten up. Do I have to teach you again? Like, or sometimes I cut the song short and move on to the next song, you know. But when it works, it's one of the best sort of collaborative feelings you can have.
I feel like there must be a difference in pubs specifically, performing to like a Tuesday audience versus a drunk Friday audience.
Tuesday can be more listening-y, but you know, the weekends can be, you can be listening crowds on the weekends too, and you can get drunken crowds on the Tuesday. And I like both. I like both. You know, if it's like, as long as the people you're with on stage are able to be on the same page about how we're going to address this crowd. Are we going to like just treat them like a listening audience, or are we going to force them into being a dancing audience? Or if there's a dancing yelling crowd, are we going to try and force them to listen to us, or are we just going to like rile up the party? As long as everyone on stage is, because both can work. You can calm a drunken audience down and say, hey folks, listen, we're going to sing to you. And you know, you can do that if you want. But as long as everyone on stage is on the same page about what the approach is going to be tonight, then any situation can work well.
That makes sense. And in Montreal, the pubs you perform at, do you tend to perform at the same ones, or does it change?
I, over the years, I've performed at all the sort of Irish pubby pubs, and But now I play just at this one called Hurley's on Crescent Street downtown, which is one of the sort of main institutions of that kind of music. And, you know, they have the Irish Society brunches and balls and stuff like that. So they're entrenched in that community of, and not just Irish, but, you know, sort of pub culture. They have music 7 nights a week, and on the weekends it's on two floors, you know, like two bands on the weekends. And so they really do a lot for the whole music community, and this, you know, specifically the folk music and Celtic music, but all music. So that's where I play mostly now. I only do 2 nights a week, which is great. I used to do up to, you know, 5-6 nights a week, and that was too much. So I'm really happy with where I am in that now.
I was gonna ask, you've been a musician for a while now, you've been doing it professionally, and I'm assuming you also, you know, enjoy music aside from your profession as well. And you know how, like, music, whether it be like a specific song or a specific artist, they hold so much memories and emotions. Well, I guess I have two questions. One of them is, are there any like songs you perform that hold like very specific memories and emotions for you that you remember every time you perform? And then I'll get to my second question afterwards.
There are a couple of songs that have lines in them that I don't, well, when I'm singing a song, you know, if I sing the same song twice a week for 25 years, I don't listen to the words every time I sing it. You know, sometimes it just comes out, and then sometimes I'm busy, you know, communicating with my audience, or I'm with my bandmates, or with someone in the audience. Sometimes, you know, but there are a few songs that have lines in them that hit me sometimes, you know. And one of them is The Field Behind the Plow by Stan Rogers. You know, there's it's just some heartbreaking stuff in there. And there's another Irish song called Cavan Girl. And anyway, they have some lines in there that always get to me. And it doesn't bring back memories, but I listen to what the songwriter is saying through me. And sometimes it really hits me hard, you know, I'm like, oh, geez. Oh man, that's tough, you know. Or another one that I sing sometimes is okay, most of the songs I sing are traditional, but I'm happy to mention three that have known composers here, but I sometimes do a song by Tom Waits called I Hope I Don't Fall in Love with You. It's just great poetry, and you know, it's probably half the time I sing it, I finish the song verklempt, you know, just like and actually that happened to me one time with another song, a song by the Pogues called Thousands Are Sailing, about the mass sort of immigration from Ireland, specifically in the song, to New York on the coffin ships, you know, where most of the people died, or I don't know the numbers, but a lot of people on the boats died on the way over, coffin ships. And so colleague and I were doing musical interludes for a book reading, and the book happened to take place on one of these ships, and it was addressing the issue of the people, you know, the young people dying of cholera on the ships, you know. And so as the woman's reading this really sad passage, you know, I lean over to my colleague and I say, hey, let's, you know, that goes perfectly with this song, Thousands Are Sailing. And I tell you, it started, and I don't cry a lot, but when I started singing the song, and I just started bawling. I couldn't stop the song. The thing, it was, I think the thing was being recorded or whatever, but I was just like, it took me half of the song to get it together where I could actually sing, you know. It was like super moving, because I that time I really listened to the words I was saying, you know, and which I don't always do, like I said, and it sort of echoed what the story that the author was talking about. And I was like, oh man, I'm singing a horrific song, like this is. And it's a beautiful melody. And I was like, geez, this talks about terrible stuff. And anyway, so that was a really moving moment for me. And I wasn't trying to, like, you know, have an emotion. It was just like, oh, it got me, you know, got the better of my, tricked me. So that's something I'll always remember.
Oh my God. Music has so much power. Yeah. It's insane. Yeah, I was gonna say, my second question was, were there any songs that, you know, you used to really connect with, or had, you know, they made you feel stuff, but then after like looking at a from a professional point of view, or maybe you prefer started performing it and performed too many times and it doesn't hold that power anymore.
I think the phenomenon you're talking about has happened to me for all music, most music, a little bit. Like I think all of music is a little bit demystified to me, and it doesn't, because I'm often doing the harmonic analysis or formal analysis of the piece I'm listening to, so I'm not always feeling it. But I think every, you know, as I said, I think I feel all music a little bit less, with notable exceptions. There's one song I still really like called La Jardinera. It's a Chilean song by Violeta Parra, and it's that song, especially her performance of it, it still really moves me a lot. Yeah, it hasn't, and because of what I was talking about, generally, as the musicians that I know and work with, we actually don't listen to music a lot. And if we do, it's because we are, doing it, or in my case, I mean, it's because I'm doing some sort of analysis, or I need to listen to it for research or something. But if we're having a conversation and someone puts music on in the background, well, that's no good, because everyone's brain is divided, and we're like, you can't concentrate on what everyone's saying because you're listening to the song. It's like music is not background music for us, and it eventually gets annoying. Like, what? Why am I brain tired? What's annoying here? It's like a buzzing thing, or someone like tapping on the shoulder. It's like, stop doing that. So right now on this tour that I'm on, we're in the car. We drove yesterday for, I don't know, 7 or 8 hours or something, and it was dead silence in the car for most of the time. And we were talking, and at one point the driver and the tour manager for this portion of the tour, she was like, let's put some music on. Okay. And I was like, oh God, no. So we found a CD in the car. There's no signal where we were. So we found a CD in the car and put it on. And I was like, and it was good. It was jazz, good jazz singer. I liked it, but nobody talked for the hour that the CD was on. Right. And then this finally the CD is okay. Now we can get back to talking. So it's not that I don't like music, but it's just it's for listening to. It's not background.
This is so wild to me. I can't imagine it. Like, the I understand. I definitely understand why and where you're coming from, but never would have guessed that in a car with musicians, you would either listen to music and not talk, or just like not listen to music and talk.
Oh
Can't have
yeah.
both.
Can't have both. No.
Oh wow. Yeah. Hey, good to know. If I have musician friends, I'm not putting
Well,
songs
yeah,
on in the
ask them. Maybe
background.
other people are different.
But I mean, I feel like it also comes with years of like with the amount of years that you've been doing this professionally too. But yeah, awesome. Well, is there anything you would like to mention, talk about before we
No,
go
I
to
just want to
this?
say thanks for, dedicating this amount of podcast to me and what I'm doing, and to the
Oh my
project with
God.
Evan Corleone, and thanks for your interest. I really appreciate it.
Of course, it was lovely. So you're very interesting to not, and I mean that in a good way. Not
I
like
know.
you're interesting. It was really lovely chatting with you, and well, thank
Likewise.
you for taking the time
Yes.
from your tour.
Yeah.
I assume it must be tiring, so I really appreciate you coming on here and talking with me.
It's my pleasure.